that near miss over San Francisco. How big a deal was it really? I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome into the Aero News special feature. Thanks for downloading us today. My guest is 2008 National CFI of the Year, Max Trescott. We're here to talk today about something that Max mentioned in his blog at maxtrescott.com. And that is an interesting take and a little bit deeper look into the near miss that was reported over San Francisco between a Boeing 777 and a Cessna light aircraft. Max, welcome in, and thanks for taking some time for our listeners today.
Hi, Paul. Great to be here as always.
Well, listen, you kind of dug deeper into this than anybody I had seen. Let's start by letting you recall the incident and what you saw that maybe some other people had missed.
Sure. I think a lot of people have heard the thumbnail sketch of the incident, which was that Saturday, the 27th of March, a Cessna was traveling past San Francisco Airport at about 1,500 feet when it came a lot closer to a United Boeing 777 that was departing than anybody probably would have liked. The thing that probably was not brought out in a lot of this, the analyses was that both aircraft were talking with the controller at the time, and both were properly following the instructions of the controller at the time. I've seen a lot of people who've commented, oh, it's a terribly unsafe place for the Cessna to have been, or, oh, why was that Cessna there? And, you know, frankly, probably 100 aircraft a day travel the same path that Cessna was flying. And in the 20-some years I've been in this area, I've never heard of a conflict in that particular area. The airport, the aircraft arriving and departing San Francisco are set up so they don't go anywhere near where that particular Cessna was, except when they have the heavily loaded aircraft which are going to Asia. And those are launched out toward the ocean, which is a potential conflict with the aircraft flying up and down the peninsula at 1,500 feet. However, in general, the controller will either turn an aircraft like the Cessna to parallel the departing 777, or they'll route the smaller Cessna directly over the field, or right over directly overhead San Francisco International Airport. In this case, the controller did neither of those. He was relying upon one of three options he has for separating out the aircraft. Unfortunately, it looks like he may have given the instructions for that third option, visual separation, a little bit late.
Okay, now, I think that one of the reasons that this really hit the media, and especially the general media, is because of the availability of the recording of the air traffic conversation. And I almost kind of had to chuckle when the first officer was flying the plane, apparently. She came on the radio kind of obviously startled, audibly startled, and told the controller, wow, that set off the TCAS. And then there was a pause and she says, we have to talk, or something to that effect. And it was just kind of a funny let down the guard moment in terms of listening to the audio. But how big a deal really was this to the crew of that airliner, and are they overreacting to this?
Boy, all great questions. And yes, you know, you can get the audio on my website if you want to listen to it there for anybody who hasn't heard it. And the tone of voice, I think, is probably what's important throughout all of this conversation. Every bit of conversation is normal up until the point where the controller suddenly very rapidly tells the Cessna to make a turn. And then, you know, that's the point where you can see, oh, he doesn't sound as calm and cool and collected as he was prior to that. And then, of course, the lady who, by the way, a friend of mine who works for United says that she was actually the captain of that flight. I thought she was the FO, but she apparently was the captain. And, yeah, she said, okay, that set off a TCAS. That was that. And then she paused, and finally she said, we need to talk. The tower just basically said, Roger. So I think that they were I think that Cessna probably came closer to the airliner than the airliner, you know, would have liked. You know, was there danger? I've read that they were 1,500 feet apart horizontally, which is what, about almost a third of a mile, and they were several hundred feet apart vertically. So there was no danger, but of course, you know, if people hadn't, you know, turned when they did, it could have been worse.
Well, and here's the thing too. Let's get into the part that I thought was particularly interesting about your blog posting, and that was the rules for separation and how they vary depending on where the aircraft's located. Clearly, they didn't have enough horizontal separation or vertical separation to satisfy that part of the requirement. But I guess it comes down to a technicality that the NTSB will look at to find out whether they were legally assigned visual separation.
Right, and I think that's the crux of the issue. The amount of separation that's applied between aircraft depends on a lot of factors. For example, if you're en route and are more than 40 miles from the radar antenna or greater than 40, you know, so on, that will change whether the aircraft needs to be 3 miles or 6 miles apart and so on. Both of these aircraft were in Class Bravo. Both had Class Bravo clearances. And so in that case, there are three different kinds of separation that can be applied. Either they have to always be a mile and a half apart horizontally, or they have to always be apart 500 feet vertically, or you can have what's called visual separation. And there's about a four-step process that controllers have to follow to establish a visual separation. And they have to complete that process before the aircraft come closer than a mile and a half or 500 feet vertically. And I think what's going to be at issue is that I think it's probably going to be the case that the controller probably was a little bit late in completing his communications with the Cessna, which then established visual separation. Once that visual separation established, they can literally come inches apart and still be legal. In this case, though, I think that they were probably closer than 500 feet by the time the visual separation was established.
Okay, there's kind of a separate issue here, too, and that is, had the communication been completed in time, and it's possible it has been. We'll have to wait and see what the investigation shows.
That's right. That's entirely possible.
If it was completed in time, it still would have set off the TCAS.
True. Yep. And the TCAS is certainly, I think the crew, well, first of all, there are two types of TCAS alerts that you can get. One is a traffic advisory, which is similar to the kind that any aircraft, you know, a G-1000 equipped Cessna would get, for example, and just tells you that there's an aircraft somewhere in the area. The next level is a resolution advisory, and that's one where the crew is actually legally required to follow that climb or that descent order, even if it, by the way, contradicts the controller order. And so they got one of those from their TCAS box telling them to descend. And my guess is they don't get them very often, and I'm sure that's why the crew was a little upset.
Okay. Well, it's going to be interesting. It's going to come down to, I guess, like one of these matter of inches / photo finish type controversies,
yeah, exactly,
where the NTSB is going to have to figure out whether the I's were dotted and the T's were crossed. But
I agree.
When we come back from the break, Max, I want to talk about another issue that you discussed, and that is how changes in the 830 rules for the NTSB may increase the reporting of near mid-air collisions, and whether that's going to be a statistical thing or if we're going to be able to tell if there's actually a change in the trend. My guest is Max Trescott. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
You hear that sound? It's one of the all-time great inventions. Takes lids off cans just like that. But now, let's picture something even bigger. A tool that can take the lid off a whole airport. Actually, thousands of airports. It's a Garmin Wass GPS. Lets you make glide path approaches using runways that were once closed tight during IFR conditions. Hey, if you're gonna fly in the soup, you gotta have an opener. Garmin Wass GPS. Follow the leader.
Diamond Aircraft's D-Jet is the ultimate private aircraft for the owner-flown market, offering simplicity of operation, safety, and affordability. Imagine starting the turbine with a simple push of a button. Push the single-lever throttle forward. Monitor your flight on the cutting-edge G-1000 with integrated autopilot and enjoy the reliability, performance, smoothness, and quiet of turbine power. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3222.
Welcome back to the Aero News special feature. Paul Plack here with Max Trescott, talking about separation, near mid-airs, what constitutes a near mid-air, and when you have to report it. And Max, in your blog recently at maxtrescott.com, you talked about the pilots of United Flight 889 initiating a report of a near mid-air with a Cessna near San Francisco. And you say that new NTSB rules may make those reports more common. What have the changes been, and what will the effect be on our reporting and for that matter, our emotional assessment of how we're doing as a segment of aviation?
Sure. The rules that United have requires that anytime they have a conflict resolution, that they have to file an internal form they call the FSAP, which is a Flight Safety Awareness Program, What's changed as of the 8th of March is that anybody who has a TCAS alert of that type, regardless of what company they work for, is going to also have to notify the NTSB. So that's not going to apply to most small plane pilots because we don't have the high-level TCAS systems that give conflict resolutions. But it's going to every aircraft which is more than 12,500 pounds and or carries more than 19 passengers, because these aircraft are required to have the TCAS systems. And if somebody gets a conflict resolution, resolution advisory, an RA, that tells them to climb or descend, they are now required to tell the NTSB about that. So I think there's going to be a lot more reports coming into the NTSB, and we may actually see many more of these appearing in the media in the near future, and it might tend to look like a spike in near mid-air collisions.
Well, Max, it's going to be a strange new world that we're reporting in, because we're going to have a lot of things to talk about that were never envisioned even 10 or 20 years ago. And it'll be fun to keep in touch with you, because your blog is going into detail and depth in some of these things that nobody else seems to be. And we appreciate your insight.
Well, I'm happy to do it. It's always a lot of fun to dig just a little bit deeper and show folks what this actually means. By the way, over this past weekend, totally overhauled the website. So folks can go to g1000book.com and see what we've done there, and also sign up for our new Flying Tips newsletter.
All right. We'll encourage everybody to look into all the different things that Max has going on. And Max, continued success in all of them. And you'll find links to all of them, too, at maxtrescott.com. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Paul.
You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Platt. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.